Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Any Three Things podcast. This is Father Ambrose coming to you on Monday, 18th of December, now into those privileged days of O Antiphons leading up to the Feast of Christmas. Just 1 week until the big day, which is absurd to me. This really short Advent is kind of mind-bending. And with me is Kristen Cozy, who's our organist, choir director at both Sacred Heart and Mary Help. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you, and always a pleasure working with you at Masses. And now I'm good to let the folks through all the parishes kind of get a little inside peek into the life of a music director during the busiest and craziest time of the year. Is this busier than Easter?
It's a little different feel. Okay. They're both very busy.
Yeah. So you've been, before all the Beacons of Light stuff, you were just the music director at Sacred Heart, had been there for a number of years.
Yeah, I've been there most of the last 30 years.
And then last year, Julian, who was our music director at Mary Help, took another job down in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I apologize for my southern accent. It's not very good. And at that time, we were trying to figure out what we were going to do. And we came to an agreement with you. I don't actually remember how it happened.
He was asking me to substitute for him. So you, as you did a job search for a new person in December, which is a difficult time to do a job search for a musician.
Yeah.
And when I looked at the workload, I realized that it would be doable.
Yeah. And has it been doable?
Initially, my load was too heavy because I was teaching too many piano students as well. During the summer, I made that adjustment, lightened that load, and yeah, it's been doable since.
Nice. I'm glad, and it's been a pleasure having you and working with you. What's the overlap like? So I honestly just don't remember because I don't frequently have both Mary Help and Sacred Heart on the same Sunday. So I've got no clue if you're picking the same music both places, Like, how are you managing that?
There is some similarity. Many times I do have some of the ordinaries, you know, the mass settings, the Gloria, things like that will be consistent week to week, and many times they will match up between the two parishes. Sometimes they don't. There are certain mm-hmm. settings each parish has that the other doesn't, so we are not neglecting what each parish knew. Sometimes, especially here in Advent, the songs that are familiar to the two communities are quite different.
Interesting. Yeah, because, like, normally, I think of Christmas and Advent music as it's all the same, and it's been the same songs on the radio for 50 years.
Well, some of it is Sacred Heart, for a long time, had Oregon Catholic Press materials,
mm-hmm.
and they currently have a World Library Press Missal. Mm. So that gives us a completely different set of music than the Gather hymnal, which they both do have, too, as well.
Yeah, the World of Catholic Music Publishing is a... How can I say this in a way that's polite enough for a podcast? It is a little bit gross. It is tough, and there's like songs that everybody loves that are only in one thing, and so you have to get special permission to print them in another thing. I think a solid chunk of your job is just printing music that's not in the hymnal that we have into a worship aid so that we can sing things that everyone thinks that you should just know and have and be ready to use, but there's this whole legal thing behind it that takes a ton of time.
I do like the fact that we do get to reprint music. It's the mechanism on it is so much easier than it used to be. That allows us, like at Sacred Heart, I said, we had the Oregon Catholic Press materials and we knew we can retain some of the best of that and still use it, even though we have Gather hymnals in the pews. It gives us the flexibility to really choose what might work best for that community and that mass.
Which even that is an interesting thought, right? So it seems to me, which I don't actually know this because I've been a priest for a good while now, and I've never been stably in one community. I'm always going around and saying masses at a bunch of different churches, and so I kind of have the bird's eye view on a community and the music choices. Whereas for a community, there's a set of songs that they know, that they've been singing for a while, that there's principles of picking music, that the music director, who my experience is most music directors have been there forever. It seems to me, I'm not sure if that's actually the case, but...
It really depends on the parish. Some parishes see more turnover than others. At Sacred Heart, we landed there in 1993. I was hired as a part-timer to help with two of the masses.
Yeah.
And then over time, that changed, and we ended up staying. We were military. We had expected to move on 4 to 6 years, and ended up staying when he got out of the military, so my husband.
Right.
So, you know, just... It all turns out however it does. Here at Mary Help, they've usually had people for multiple years and then mm-hmm. a changeover.
Yeah. And those changes are hard. Different priests come in with different priorities. And mm-hmm. it's interesting, though, because... So this is coming from me as a priest, as someone who wants good worship for my parishioners. There are some things which are a legitimate difference of preferences between music directors, communities, priests. And there's some things that are not, that are actually, like, these are the principles behind what makes good Catholic liturgical music.
Oh, yes.
And I don't think that most people, even some priests, don't have a good sense of which is which in those two. And so I think what's ended up happening in a lot of places, and this is something that's a humongous longer conversation that we've been having on our Family Worship Commission sessions, is like, okay, so what is, this is the way that Catholic worship needs to be done. What is, oh, this is just what Father likes, right? And I think a lot of parishioners, and especially the people who are involved in volunteering and running the masses at church, can just think, oh yeah, so we had Father X, he did liked these things, here's Father Y, he likes these things, and it's all just kind of whatever the priest likes. And like, we're trying not to do that.
No, it's a discernment process, really. A community builds over time. They have learned certain pieces to the point where that is how they pray. That mm-hmm. is their prayer language, in a sense. Mm-hmm. These pieces have always been there. It's what they're used to. It's the first thing they think of when they hear a certain text.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to throw that away, because that's like ripping out what they know.
Yeah.
But if you decide that what they know isn't desirable, or for various liturgical reasons, I mean, there are guidelines for this. And if there are things that really are less desirable, you can use them less and then begin to learn new things. But it takes time to transition like that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I remember prepping, and this is just like a story from another priest, right? Prepping for a funeral. And the family was like, oh no, we don't want those new things. We want the traditional songs, like On Eagle's Wings. And it's like, that song is not more than 60 years old, right? It's only traditional in a certain sense.
No. Yeah.
There's a lot older tradition behind that. 60 might not be the right number. But
1970s, 80s for that one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is it's getting dangerously close to 60 years.
Oh, come on. It's not that bad.
And so the sense of what's traditional, what I'm comfortable with, it's got a sentimental value, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh yeah, I remember those songs singing up. I remember those songs singing up. I remember singing those songs growing up. I cannot talk. And so that's the sentimental value, which then helps me feel connected, helps me feel rooted. There's a sense of belonging that comes from everybody knowing the same songs and singing them together. But then there's also, like we were talking about, a religious dimensions that go beyond this. There's a reality that music both ought to, just along with everything else in the Mass, ought to build us up as the people who worship God in this space, should lift us up to deeper prayer. Even, right, which deeper prayer is sometimes not comfortable.
Well,
and there's also it has to glorify God, which is even the first purpose before it's edifying to us, is that we have to bring our best. We have to do the best music that we can, because this is for the purpose of giving glory to God and for pouring our hearts out in worship. And so it's a constant thing. There's a responsibility on behalf of the staff, the volunteers, the priests, to help the parishioners learn how to pray through their music. Mm-hmm. And that's always a constantly new process, because there's new parishioners coming in. We have to teach our young people how to sing and pray with their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So you're never stably perfect. You never...
Oh, no. And some of it's cultural as well. A little bit of enculturation, you know, understanding where each community is, where each country is, you know, whatever is considered normal. And then looking at, like you said, worship. Does the music worship at the place it's put in the Mass, or does it detract?
Mm-hmm.
Is the text a good text that builds our faith properly?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the texts we've had in the past have not been holding up to that scrutiny.
Yeah, or even just really silly things. Like, I remember in college, the priest complained after Mass because this was the year before I was in charge of picking which hymns we sang at Mass. Just to be clear, this was not my fault. There was a year that I was in charge of that, but not one of those years. I remember the priest was like, why are we singing holy, holy, holy at an evening mass. The words are early in the morning, right? And this is at like 6 o'clock at night. Why are we singing this? And I was like, you know what? That didn't occur to me.
Yeah, I'll admit I think of that because sometimes I'll use that hymn at a vigil mass.
Yep.
And in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's not quite as good a fit for the vigil, and yet for other reasons the text works, and that is only one phrase of the whole
hymn. Right, exactly. And we are supposed to pray all the time, right? So we can reference other times of prayer, maybe.
Well, it's morning somewhere, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so then speaking of picking songs, you have been frantically picking songs and having choir rehearsals for months now, right?
Well, it is a weekly process. The weekend masses never end. So
yeah,
there's the lists just come every week. Mm-hmm. And you have to choose your music. You have to make sure people are prepared to sing it properly.
Yeah.
You have to make sure you can play it.
Ooh, yeah.
You also have to pick any other incidental things that are going to work around that. Then there's the worship aids.
Yep.
I work with Julie here at Mary Help to do the worship aids for Sacred Heart and for Mary Help. That involves possibly downloading text or music. It involves logging into a system called OneLicense,
okay,
where we actually own a license with them. And we report every reprint for royalty purposes.
Mm-hmm.
We also report every podcast. So Sacred Heart is streaming their services on a good day, or at least uploading them if it's not a good day.
Right.
And so everything that we sing during that mass has to be reported to OneLicense to
right.
be within copyright law.
Which is why on this podcast, I recorded the music myself so that I didn't
That's one way to get around
that.
Copyright. Every once in a while, we run into a bump where the OneLicense system does not have the permission.
Mm.
Like, for instance, last weekend at Mary Help, our closing song was People Look East.
Oh, yeah.
And OneLicense did not own the reprint right to that.
Yeah.
So
is
we
it old enough? That it's
No, it's not public domain
man.
Either. So we had to go ahead and simply tell people to open their hymnals.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we might have incurred a fee of like $20 to $50 just to print the one song.
Yeah.
And that's just not worth it.
No.
Or at Sacred Heart, there's one song that we sometimes use at closing. Again, OneLicense does not have the podcast rights to it. So we just fade out the podcast.
Yeah. And so in addition to taking care of all of those tiny technical details, somewhere that you do every week, right?
Mm-hmm.
You somehow have to fit time prepping for Christmas. So how does that work?
Okay.
How do you do more work beyond the too much work you're already doing?
Well, the fact is, even with the two parishes, the workload is still part-time.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some expansion opportunity there.
Okay, yeah.
Preparing for Christmas, though, there's a certain amount of lead time involved. Oftentimes you want special music.
Yeah.
Especially before the service starts. You'd like to get extra instruments and singers involved. You want choral pieces that sound wonderful. So if you pick, let's say, a piece that's more classic-oriented,
mm-hmm.
you know, like something from the Renaissance or the Baroque, we have to start working on that in October.
Yeah. It takes a lot of practice. They're hard. The voice parts for a lot of those are much more difficult, and especially for a parish choir that's just a bunch of volunteers.
Oh, yes.
Most of whom do not have real musical training, and they've just mm-hmm. sung in a choir for a while, which is, and I guess in a certain sense, real musical training, but not like the professional kind.
Right. We have some people who've had some vocal training. We have people who've never learned to read music.
Yeah.
And yet they learn their parts too. It just takes longer. It has to be trained and worked over time.
Yeah.
So the preparations begin in October, definitely. As far as extra instruments, oftentimes I'm contacting people end of October, early November for availability. And so they can commit to, yes, I can come on Christmas Eve. Yes, I can come Christmas Day. So you end up with a grouping, different groupings of people for the two masses as well.
Yeah.
So like there's a song we're doing for Christmas Eve at Mary Help.
Mm-hmm.
It requires a flute to play along. It's integral to the piece. So on Christmas morning, we don't have a flute player
mm-hmm.
and we can't do that piece.
Oh, yeah, huh.
And that's okay, because we're doing less pre-service music on the day anyways.
Right,
so,
yes, it's early.
Yeah, an 8:30 mass, people are not showing up at 8 a.m. to hear the music. If they come that
yeah.
early, they want to pray.
Yeah,
we'll start the music 15 minutes before for that one.
I don't know what you think of this, but I have occasionally opined that any mass that starts before 9 a.m. should have no music.
Well, I would be sad to say no music, but it is definitely a challenge to sing well at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, well, when we'll do our best on Christmas Day. I have the 8:30 Mass on Christmas, so okay. I will try to sing at least a little bit for the biggest feast day of the church year.
Yeah, the biggest problem we'll have is...
Not the biggest, Easter is bigger.
You know, the singers will have sung the night before.
Oh, yeah.
And so their voices may be tired.
I remember being in choir in college for Easter, and... Our college was interesting in that we all stayed on campus. We didn't get an Easter Holy Week break. Instead, we took both weeks off of school, but stayed on campus and did this very prayerful Holy Week, Easter mm-hmm. Week celebration. It was awesome. So we did all of the Holy Week services on campus with the college chaplain and lots of prayer, and we would like work outside to make sure the campus was really beautiful. Our school only had like 60, 70 students, and so you can do these kinds of things. It's an interesting place. And all build up to Easter Vigil, and tons of music, and you sing, and you sing. And then the guys, after Easter Vigil, would go out and smoke cigars and sing every song in the hymnal that had the word Alleluia in it, because we hadn't been allowed to use an Alleluia in
right.
over a month.
Right.
And after the end of that, we were all basses for the next morning. But we still had to sing
tenor.
Easter morning mass. It was a little bit rough. We always did some really beautiful music for it, but it was a little bit of a struggle to warm up.
As church musicians, doing music for multiple days, that's where Holy Week is harder, because you have four days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas, at least, you're the night before and the day. Usually. This year, we get double whammied.
Yeah, this is a tough year for it. We've got all of the vigil masses for the fourth Sunday of Advent on December 23rd, which is a Saturday. Sunday, December 24th, we've got a full slate of morning masses.
For the fourth Sunday of Advent.
Fourth Sunday of Advent, which is eight masses. We have eight masses each Sunday morning. And then, because we have a maximum of 15 masses per calendar day, because we've got five priests times three masses as the limit that canon law gives us, we've got seven masses for Christmas Eve, and then another eight masses Christmas Day, December 25th, Monday. So it'll be
it'll
be fun.
Between Saturday evening to Monday noon, how many masses are you saying?
I don't know. I don't make the schedule, so don't blame me for this. I somehow only have four. I don't know how that happened. I won't complain. I think most of us, so the maximum that someone would have is going to be five or six.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got one Saturday, I think all of us have three on Sunday, and some of us have, we all have one or two on Monday, Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Which is good, because then I have already pre-recorded the podcast episode for Christmas Day with Father Mike. So look forward to that one. It'll be fun. You can, if you've got a drive to go visit your family members on Christmas, listen to that podcast, because it's an entertaining one. Father Mike and I had a really good time. And we talked about this specifically. Why does the church limit a priest to only three masses in a day? Shouldn't we just like crank those Christmas masses out? And I think as a musician, you can feel this too. You don't just want to get up there and perform the music and get it done. You want to pray that stuff, because it's Christmas for you too.
Well, what I have told the musicians is if people walk away saying the music was beautiful, we actually missed our target.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to say the mass was beautiful.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the music is part of and puts forward the worship.
Yeah. I think that's a good perspective, which, of course, the music being beautiful is in service of the Mass being beautiful and this encounter with the Lord Jesus Christ in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult. You know, I forget who I was talking to, but someone had been a server earlier on. Then when they got older into high school, they didn't want to serve, be an altar server anymore, because it was harder for them to pray while they were working. And you can't see me do finger quotes when you're listening to this podcast, but just imagine me doing the finger quotes, right? Because the work of doing the Mass makes it harder to have a particular experience of praying the Mass. And especially for us, like Kristen, working every Mass she goes to practically, and of course me, in a certain sense, working every Mass I say, you have to find this different way into entering into the work of the Mass in order for it to be a prayer. And which, of course, the word liturgy comes from the Greek, like work on behalf of the people, that for the sake of the people of God, we are working to render unto God a pleasing sacrifice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And each of us has a particular role in doing that. The people in the pews are there as the body of Christ. The priest is there in the person of Christ, the head. The musicians are there as other members of the body performing particular functions. The lectors do their thing. Everyone is supposed to be praying with all of their heart. And it's hard, especially when you're focusing on performing a particular activity. Like, sometimes it's hard to focus on the words that are in the missal. You would think it'd be really easy to read out loud, but sometimes that's hard,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that focus, like, I have to be paying attention. Oh, okay, is this one of the days where we say a Gloria or not? You're looking at a bunch of music, and what is that? My choir member's not paying attention. They're going to miss their entry, right? Like, all of those small practical details can make it hard to focus on the spiritual realities that are going on, and especially then when you're doing it for the third, the fourth, the fifth time through a weekend, it is really difficult to remember the sacredness of it. And so that's why there's these limits on how much we can do. And it's good that we've reduced some of our Mass times so that our ministers are able to enter into the prayer more fully and give themselves in the spiritual sense more completely without being so lost in the exhaustingness of the practical details. And it's what we want for everyone, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, there, you know, before Beacons of Light 10, 15 years ago, Sacred Heart would run four Christmas Masses.
Yeah.
And I had choir members who would literally sing all four of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to take one or two choirs and split them up among four services.
Yeah.
It was a lot of work. It was wearing on the people involved. At this point, both Mary Help and Sacred Heart have one Eve Mass, one Day Mass, and then, of course, Sacred Heart has an additional Spanish Mass
which is
that
a different,
I'm not responsible for.
Yeah, right. Different music director, different choir.
Yes. So
different language.
In that sense, you know, one combined choir can cover those two Masses.
Yeah.
You know, it's a much more doable request.
Still a lot of driving back and forth and work for you, though.
Well, it's not bad. It takes me about 12 minutes in good weather to get between the parishes, and the timing works out very well. I often have time to talk with people at Mary Help after their 8:30 in the morning Mass and work with things. As long as I depart Mary Help a little before 10 at the latest, mm-hmm. I get to Sacred Heart in time to do what I need to. I often preset a lot of things at Sacred Heart, so things are pretty much there and ready when I walk in,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, just do what I need to for our choir and cantor there, and we're ready to go.
Wow, that's really nice, and we're grateful for your dedication and your work. I know it's always a lot, and there's a lot of people working really hard to make all of these things happen, and I think it's really easy, especially in our consumeristic culture, right, that, mm-hmm. oh, I want my Mass to be the way that I like it, and, I mean, I feel that way myself a lot of times, and I have to, right, because even it's especially easy for me to fall into that trap, because I'm a priest, and I'm supposed to be in charge of the Mass, right, but it's easy to forget all of the people who put in so much time and work and effort into bringing these things into being, and pour their hearts out in service of the Lord and of the community. And so you got to constantly have that recognition and that gratitude.
And I would like to give a shout out to all the music volunteers. We have people who are showing up Sunday nights for an hour and a half at Sacred Heart 4 or 5 weeks in a row to learn the hand chime parts.
Oh, yeah.
We have brass ensemble people coming in, practicing on their own. They're all volunteers. These people are doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. They're not being paid.
Yeah.
They're showing up and practicing and putting this together and playing for us. The singers and the choirs, they come once a week. Not every single week. Everybody has their schedules. But they come consistently working at the music over and over. And they'll work on their own time, too, especially the cantors. They will spend a fair amount of time on their own learning their parts. And, you know, we wouldn't enjoy the music we have without all these volunteers.
Yeah, for sure. And so with all that work, doing all that preparation, practicing all of those things, let's have a fun question as our third thing to close off here.
Okay.
What piece are you looking forward to the most? And if you can't pick one, I'll let you take the easy out and pick one for each church since you've got two and maybe a different set.
I get two. Good.
You get two. I know it's hard to pick.
Actually, I do have a favorite Christmas hymn.
Mm-hmm.
And the Christmas hymn is O Little Town of Bethlehem.
Okay, yeah.
I love the words, especially verses 3 and 4. So if you're curious, go look it up. Verses 3 and 4, O Little Town of Bethlehem. So that one's a favorite of mine, definitely. Since I do get a second pick, I do love Silent Night.
Okay, yeah. I got to visit the little church in I don't remember if the church is in Germany or Austria, because like the river is right next to the little church, and one side is Germany, one side is Austria, where it was written, and you know the story of the priest who did with like very limited resources had to wanted beautiful Christmas music for his congregation that he could play on guitar and all these other sorts of things to make such a beautiful hymn, and it's. I'll give a little spoiler for next week on Christmas. We also talk about that hymn, Father Mike and I, in that upcoming episode. So listen for that, folks. It's a good one. Those are both great. I think one of my favorites, and this is one of those, like we were talking about earlier, just that nostalgia, that sentimental connection, that my parish growing up, the recessional hymn for Christmas was always Joy to the World. And a certain part of me doesn't feel like it's Christmas unless we've come out of that church, like, blowing the roof off with incense and Joy to the World and just the kind of loud, exuberant joy.
Well, I am glad you're going to be at the Christmas Eve service at Sacred Heart, because our closing song is Joy to the World.
Let's go.
Complete with hand chimes and brass quartet.
Yeah, so can you hear the hand chimes over the brass quartet?
I think so, because I can hear them from the organ, which is not near them. They're in a different octave.
Okay, good.
So that they're higher up than the brass.
It's one of those things that you have to think about with music that people who aren't into music technically don't get. Like, there's musical space, right? And, like, you can't fit different things into the same musical space. And so you have to, and if you want people to actually hear things, you have to differentiate them across octaves, literally spatially, like you can have something coming through a speaker on the right side versus the left side, right? And you have to have all of that in your mind, and you've got all of those things running through your head while you're planning these things. It's just so much that goes into this, and having a whole...
Well, while playing organ, when you're playing the organ, you're actually orchestrating as you play, which pipes, which sounds you choose for each manual, each keyboard. And so when I'm playing, I'll listen to the cantor, what tone of voice do they have? And I'll listen to, if we have a flute or an oboe, if we have a trumpet, certain sounds on the organ can mask those, and certain ones will stay out of the way. Especially like working with the string quartet we're going to have at Mary Help on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
You know, the organ, I have to choose carefully which sounds will complement that and not cover it up.
Yeah, but luckily you have a pretty shiny new organ with all the bells and whistles.
Actually, it has bells.
Does it have whistles?
I don't know. I'd have to see how high that pitch is.
In a certain sense, you could call a pipe organ just a really large whistle.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't know if that's the case.
It's a digital organ, but right, I'll admit we have some very high-pitched stops on there that would sound whistle-like if I used them that way.
There we go, bells and whistles.
But it actually, the Mary Help organ actually has a setting called a Zimbelstern, which on a real... or on a true pipe organ, it's a set of four bells. It looks a bit like your Sanctus bells, and it rotates and jingles randomly.
Oh, yeah, I know. I think I've seen those used before. That is fun.
If I do learn the postlude piece in time, I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
I plan to use the Zimbelstern on it.
So you're looking forward to that?
If I can get it together, yes.
Yeah, you've got a lot of work to do, I'm sure. So we won't keep you too long. So it sounds like a lot of music to look forward to this upcoming weekend. Kristen, we're very grateful to have you on the podcast. Thanks for sharing that perspective for our parishioners heading into this Holy Weekend. In addition to giving a shout out to all of our musical volunteers who are going to make these Christmas masses so gorgeous, I'd like to ask all our parishioners to pray for them. It is a lot of work. Pray especially for our organists who are putting in extra time. How many extra hours of practice do you think you're going to do between today, Monday, and next week, Monday, for Christmas?
I try to not think about it.
Okay. Yeah.
I enjoy playing, so I'm just going to do what needs to be done as often as possible, and you know, and of course, I'm still trying to do Christmas for my family and stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. So unthinkable number of hours of practice for Kristen between now and then.
And honestly, I know I have to log in and out of the app as part of the business here.
That's right.
But I really prefer not to think about the work I do as hours logged. It's not that at all.
Yeah, but it is still work. And please pray for all of our folks who are working so hard to make this Christmas lovely, to make it prayerful, and to make it beautiful. So thank you so much for that work. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this morning, Kristen. It's a pleasure having you.
Good to be here.
All right. God bless you all.